On Tech News Today, Google announces a dongle that turns any TV into a Chromebook. Plus, Twitter wants to put ads on your Twitter profile, and Facebook figures out how you can tag your kids who are too young to be on Facebook. It's all coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
It's time for Twit's annual audience survey, and we want to hear from you. Please visit twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. It only takes a few minutes, and your anonymous feedback will help us make Twit even better. We thank you so much for your continued support. twit.tv/survey.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, April 1st, 2015. This episode is brought to you by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace that connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/twit and receive a $50 Visa gift card when you get a loan. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. Welcome to the show. My name is Mike Elgin. Our co-anchor today is Jason Heiner, Global Editor-in-Chief of Tech Republic and Global Longform Editor of ZDNet at CBS Interactive and the editor of his long, long title. Welcome to you, Jason.
Thank you. Glad to be here, Mike. Always.
I'm glad you're here now. It's April 1st, of course, April Fool's Day. And I'm sensing a kind of an odd phenomenon online on the social networks. It seems to be a lot of people dissing April Fools in general, and several publications have sworn they're not going to participate in any way. What has happened to the esteem that people used to hold April Fool's Day in?
Yeah, it's not as fun as it used to be. I think a lot of it is just a lot of the jokes and a lot of the pranks and stuff have gotten pretty stale and predictable, and you see it, and you just kind of groan like, oh, you know, that's weak. Or this is not funny. And so, and generally online, people have pretty lame sense of humor online anyway, as we all know from forums and you know, trying to be funny. You know, The Onion almost has like an exclusive, right to funny online. A lot of other people don't do it very well. And I know I've seen some stinkers so far today and not too many good things. There are a few good things running around here and there, But I think people are just sort of over it and a little tired of it. And maybe I think if people saw some funny stuff, they saw some good stuff, you know, that might rekindle the flame. But it's definitely wanting and has been.
An April Fool's gag is something of an art form, because what you want to do is you want to fool people a little bit at first, but immediately make it clear that it's an April Fool's gag. And it's difficult to get that balance. And what happens oftentimes is they don't get the right balance. Either it's obviously an April Fool's gag where, you know, people don't even look at it because that's what it is. Or they go, the worst is the other direction, where they're too convincing and it's too believable. And then people are actually taken in and they go around talking to other people and they feel like they've been made a fool of, and nobody likes that either. And yet another reason I think that this may be happening is that, you know, it's a globalized internet. And so a lot of these things involve a kind of subtlety of language that people who don't necessarily speak English as their first language, you know, they might not pick up on it. And so, you know, every year there are lots of foreign pickup articles on different newspapers and stuff that believe an April Fool's gag. You know, because they're just doing pickups anyway, and they just don't understand that it's a gag. So, you know, it's kind of a bummer too, because, you know, it should be a lot of fun. I just think, you know, I think you're right though. I think that, you know, a big part of it is that it's just become expected for big companies like Microsoft and Google and others to do April Fool's gags, and it's kind of like almost a requirement now.
True. I did like com.google. Com.google is fun.
Yeah, Google is very good at these things.
Yeah, they do have, it's interesting. So if you type in com.google in your web browser and you start, everything's backwards, and you start typing, you end up typing backwards, and then it shows you all the results, the same results you get in Google, but it looks like, you know, it's backwards as well. And so it's almost as if you're on the other side of the screen, like looking out, you know?
Yeah.
So it's fun.
And this is a perfect one because it does two things. First of all, it's obviously a gag. Nobody would think, somebody might think it's broken, but nobody's going to walk away and say something that's wrong that they think is right. So it's clearly a gag. The second thing is that it shows off Google's programming and, you know, what you can do in a browser and that sort of thing. So it's kind of cool in that sense as well. So,
yeah, it is cool. You know, the other cool thing that I saw and that we were talking about in the pre-show, that producer Jason, one of the many Jasons running around the Twit network, brought up was this this April Fool's joke that wasn't a joke. It was kind of a joke and not a joke on in New Zealand, this BMW dealership that that said basically bring your car in with this coupon and you can trade any car that you want, you know, for a BMW. And, you know, nobody really believed it and maybe didn't even laugh at it. And like one person actually came in and tried to do it and they actually did it. They traded in, she traded in her 15-year-old station wagon for this BMW one series, wow. $50,000 vehicle. Yeah. And it has a license plate on it. No Fool, you know, on the front, which is awesome little vanity plate.
And that's brilliant because that's great to publicity for this dealership. So
yeah, amazing publicity. This has gotten covered, you know, all over the place. And so, it's like an April Fool's joke that isn't a joke. And so that's actually, I think, kind of brilliant. And, those are the two coolest things that I saw, today was com.google on that. A lot of the other stuff is just kind of a little bit of a groan.
Yeah. Well, let's jump into the not jokey news. We don't have any April Fool's stuff for you today. We have just actual news, starting with our top story, which is that Google yesterday unveiled a Chromebook dongle called the Chromebit, which turns any TV or monitor that supports HDMI into a Chromebook. It's being made by Asus. The Chromebit will be available this summer at a yet unannounced price. Google also introduced the cheapest Chromebook ever, the $149 Hisense Chromebook, as well as a device called the Higher Chromebook 11. Both have 11.6-inch displays, run quad-core ARM processors from a Chinese company called Rockchip, and have 2 gigs of RAM and 16 gigs of storage. Google also announced a $250 laptop that converts into a tablet called the Asus Chromebook Flip. You know what's interesting about this, Jason Heiner, about this Chromebit, is that they promised, they didn't say the price, but they said it would be under $100. And I'm thinking it should be way under $100. You can buy a full-fledged, you know, Chromebook now for $150. I would think that this would be $30.
Oh, man. It's pretty wild to think that, you know, for one of these, I think it's probably, if I were to guess, I would say maybe it's 50 or, you know, 50 or 60. But who knows? You know, like you said, and maybe there'll be a couple different varieties. But I think you're on the right track, though, that, you know, we're probably not far away from the day where you buy a HDMI stick computer for $30.
Yeah.
Which is amazing to think of. And, you know, these monitors are so cheap. You can get a really decent monitor now for $100-$200. So, you know, you're talking a really decent system for that price. We have to add a keyboard and a mouse. That's pretty easy, too.
Yep.
But, you know, I think they're on the right track with this stuff. I see more and more professionals that I know using TV monitors, good ones, decent ones, as their desktop monitor, using these TVs, you know, as their desktop monitor. And so This is a really good idea to sort of take a decent TV. There's some really nice panels you can get for $100 and $200 now too.
And you can always find a TV like that in a hotel room too. It's probably the most secure way to use a hotel room Wi-Fi is to use a Chromebook anyway. So this could be great. You can bring a little fold-up keyboard, little wireless mouse, and you basically don't even have to pack a carry-on bag. You know,
exactly. It's kind of a great development. Yeah, I think it's a really great development, and it does. You can potentially have a desktop-like experience even on the road, like you're saying, which is an interesting concept as well. So, yeah, I think it's a great idea, and I think hats off to them for doing it. And I do see Chromebooks gaining some traction.
Yeah.
I've recommended Chromebooks to a couple of people for the first time over the past year. People that I know that all they need to do is, you know, they want to get on the web, they want to check their email, and they want to get on Facebook. For people like that, you know, in a certain demographic, like Chromebook is exactly what they need. Like it boots fast. They don't have to worry about installing software or figuring out where their icons are or crazy stuff like that. So Yeah, I see them, and obviously they've got huge momentum in education. We saw that last year, and starting to get some momentum in certain lines of business as well. Yeah. So, you know, these things, these are all three are kind of consumer plays, but definitely things that will I think will inevitably help push Chromebooks forward, and they already have some nice momentum going. Yeah. I'm interested to see what do you think about the Asus Chromebook Flip thing. Of them trying to do almost like this tablet. I'm not sure about that. That seems a little strange to me, but yeah. I don't know. What do you think?
I think it's cool. I mean, the Pixel is a touch display, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I think for people who want it and want Chromebook, I think that's a reasonable thing. And at $250, that's, you know, still really, really cheap. The other thing that just occurred to me is that I can see us using a lot of Chrome bits here. At Twit, we have monitors everywhere, and we always have, you know, I could basically turn this monitor right here into a device. We use Google Docs for the show, and basically anybody who's hosting a show could just plug it in. This is going to be a great thing, I think, for lots of people doing surprising things. Got some more news for you in a sec, but first I want to talk about Prosper. Prosper is the place, the modern way, for you to borrow money, because it's not a bank where you go and ask for a loan. It's not borrowing money from a relative. Those are terrible ideas. This is the new way to borrow money, because you do it from somebody who wants to invest in you. You can borrow up to $35,000 in as few as 5 days, and you get a low fixed rate loan. You can fix up your house. You can start a new business, whatever it is you need a loan for. Or here's the best idea ever. Instead of racking up more debt on credit cards, you can pay off the debt that you already have using a loan from Prosper. You can check your low rate instantly, and it does not affect your credit score. Just go to prosper.com/twit and check it out. And for a limited time, Prosper is offering Twit viewers and listeners a $50 Visa gift card with your new low interest loan. You can get up to $35,000 in your account as few as 5 days and a $50 Visa gift card. Just go to prosper.com/twit for this special offer. And it's just for you, members of the Twit Army. And we thank Prosper for their support of Tech News Today. Well, let's find out what Twitter's doing. A couple of stories from Twitter. Twitter, of course, is an ad-supported network, but now they're testing the placement of ads on user profiles. Recode's Kurt Wagner joins us to talk about it. Welcome to you, Kurt.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey. Not much. Well, actually, a lot. Where would these ads be placed exactly? Would they be on the user profile to be viewed by the person's own, you know, would I see ads on my profile, for example?
So the ads are going to show up in your stream of tweets. So if I were to go to your profile, Mike, I would see all the tweets that you have compiled over the years. And about 3 or 4 tweets down, there would be kind of a promoted tweet, which is the signature ad unit that Twitter has. And it'd be broken out from the rest of your tweets, but it would be right there in your stream. You wouldn't, if you go to your own profile, you would not see these ads. But if you go to my profile, you might. And I want to throw out there, this is just a test for right now, or at least, you know, Twitter calls these things tests. But what that means is they're just experimenting with this with a very small percentage of their user base. So you're not necessarily going to see it for everybody right away, but it is indicative of how they're kind of thinking about advertising moving forward and ultimately what may happen if they decide to roll this out to everybody.
Now, would these be contextual? Would they be based on either the user activity or the subject matter in the tweets, do you think?
So they're targeted for the person who views them. So if you come to my profile, you would see a tweet that might appear in your stream anyway. So it's going to be targeted to the user. And because of that, right now these ads are only appearing for logged in Twitter users. Because otherwise, if I don't have a Twitter account and I go to your profile, they don't know who I am. They're not going to be able to target me. So right now it's just going to be people who have Twitter accounts and who are logged in. Of course, in the future, I would think that these ads would expand so that even people coming to your profile who don't have a Twitter account might see that ad. And that's a big deal for Twitter, because they've spent a lot of time trying to figure out, how do we make money from all these people who see tweets but don't have Twitter accounts? Because if you think about it, there are tweets everywhere. There's tweets on ESPN. There's tweets on CNN. We see a lot of Twitter content, but they need to figure out a way to make money from people who don't have Twitter accounts, which is the majority of people out there.
Interesting. Now, these ads will not appear on verified profiles. At least they're not appearing on the tests. Can you tell us what that's all about? Is this going to be the policy going forward?
So that's definitely the policy right now. And the reason behind it is still a little up in the air, if you will. But I speculated in my story yesterday as to why I think they might be doing this. And that is that verified accounts typically are for celebrities or people who may have other brand endorsements. And I used this example in the story. I said, Nike sponsors LeBron James. And the last thing Nike wants is to see an Adidas promoted tweet show up in LeBron James's feed when people come check out his profile. And so my guess is that Twitter's trying to avoid having to manage, you know, who has sponsorships with who, deal with advertisers and figure out who, you know, which profiles can they advertise on, which profiles can't they advertise on. So I think for now, excluding verified accounts is just the simplest way to avoid any of those kinds of issues. That being said, I would think they're missing out on some good opportunities, because who do people want to come check out? They want to check out the verified users, those people who are celebrities or musicians or whatever it may be. So we'll see if they change that down the road. But for right now, verified profiles are excluded from this test.
Kurt, this made me think of two things. One was, could there be an opportunity for them to use this as a way to drive people to potentially premium accounts? You know, if you didn't want ads to run your profile, I'm kind of wondering if they could offer, you know, a premium account. And one of the things is you don't get any ads on your profile. You get extra analytics. That's something they kind of offer already. And you get a couple other things. And so, you know, and maybe you get a special little, you know, chiclet, like the verified chiclet on there, kind of like they do on LinkedIn, you know, that gives you a. So I wonder your thoughts on that. And then the other one along with that is I wonder if for verified profiles, if they might let you opt in potentially eventually and say, you know, yes, I have a verified profile. I'm willing for you to let you run ads on mine. But it'd be some kind of rev share where you get, you know, if you're a verified profile and they do it, you get, you know, whatever, a certain small percentage, kind of like you do on YouTube right now. So would love your thoughts on those two things.
Those are two really interesting thoughts, and I guess I'll address the first one, which would be the premium account. Yeah. I would be a little bit surprised if that happened. I feel like part of the benefit of Twitter is that it is kind of this open, and anyone can join. Anyone can join the conversation, right? They're trying to connect everybody, and I feel like if they add a more expensive account where you're kind of incubating yourself from the negative parts of Twitter, the ads and whatnot, it would rub users the wrong way. And the other issue is that they're already giving these benefits like the analytics and the no ads on profiles to verified users. So they would have to essentially take that away from their most, probably their most influential user base, and then say, oh, you know, and I'm sure LeBron James might be a bad example, but hey, LeBron, you know, unless you pay $12.99 a month, we're going to continue to, we're going to start advertising on your page. I'm not sure that that would go over well with that group. As for the second part of your question, remind me what the second question
was. Yeah, so it was, again, offering you the option if you are a verified profile, if you have a verified profile, to give some rev share. Yeah, to say, yeah, you can use my account to put ads on my account, but give me some kind of rev share.
That's a really interesting idea. I would imagine that these users would be interested in that, especially those who get a lot of activity coming to their profile. You know, why not make a little extra money at the same time? The one thing is that a lot of these, I believe a lot of verified users already have these kinds of deals with the companies that they work with, right? Like they tweet out a product from an endorsement partner or whatever it may be. They're already kind of getting paid for this kind of stuff. So they may just, like, maybe the money is already good enough that they don't want to have to deal with that. And I would be, that's an intriguing idea, though, to be honest with you. I haven't thought about that until you brought it up. So I don't really have an idea of where Twitter is in terms of thinking about that, but I like the idea.
You know, this is the first time I've ever wanted to be verified. I haven't been verified. I've been a member since 2007. I have 27,000 followers. I've tweeted 27,000 tweets, and still not verified.
What's the deal, man?
I know you guys are both verified. I'm jealous now that there's ads involved. Recode's Kurt Wagner joins. Recode's Kurt Wagner's at recode.net. And you can follow him on Twitter at Kurt Wagner 8. Don't accept any substitutions. Those Kurt Wagners 1 through 7 are completely false.
They're BS, man. Go to Kurt Wagner 8.
Only go for the verified Kurt Wagner. Thanks for joining us, Kurt.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
All right.
See you, Kurt.
Twitter today also launched an offering called Curator, which is a way for media organizations to embed select tweets and vines into their websites. Nat Garen is an editor for The Next Web, and she joins us now. How are you doing, Nat?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. How does this Curator thing work exactly?
So basically what you get is a client where you can search for different topics, such as, say, April Fool's or April Fool's Day, whichever hashtag you'd like. And you get a stream of tweeters who are just talking about the topic. And you can narrow down to, you know, tweeters between this demographic, you know, based on the age or gender or location. You can also narrow down whether you want tweets with photos or tweets that aren't retweets or tweets that do not contain profanity. So you can just kind of narrow down to display a selection of tweets relevant to whatever you're talking about. So this is so media organizations can embed this into their post or whatever they're working on to kind of showcase a real-time live stream of what's being discussed on Twitter.
So now, why do you think that Twitter's doing this only to media organizations and not more widely, you know, with bloggers and maybe even freelancers and that kind of crap?
I think they're just trying to test with media organizations just because they have a bit more authority on what they can show. I guess if they're trying to showcase this on something that's like on a national organization, they just want this to be a bit more official and more authorized and just making sure that all the right tweets are kind of getting aired in national places. So, you know, we see a lot of tweets on a lot of live events, such as political elections or, you know, MTV awards. There's just so many a range of things that are we see real-time tweets getting shown on now that I think giving media organizations first dibs on working this into their content strategy helps them kind of curate the right content. And once that gets fine-tuned, I think perhaps maybe in the future Twitter will open this to all users.
Is there any protection against the inevitable troll attacks that will happen with this?
You know, there's always a possibility. You never know. Right now, it seems pretty secure. You know, they're limiting the service to select organizations that are approved by Twitter. So it seems pretty secure for now, but you never know. Twitter gets hacked all the time. All the different organizations get hacked all the time, so we never know. But the good thing is it's being curated in real time, so you can kind of always go in and shut down your account if you are getting hacked so that you're not showing anything weird. And if you do see users kind of trolling your Twitter account with using their hashtag and just typing in things that aren't relevant, you can always kind of block them. So there are preventions, but, you know, nothing on the internet's ever foolproof, I'd say.
Especially on Twitter when it comes to trolls. Nat Garen is at thenextweb.com, and you can follow her on Twitter at Nat Garen. That's NattGarun. Thanks for joining us today, Nat.
Thanks for having me.
All right. U.S. bankruptcy court has approved a plan for Radio Shack to co-brand most of its 1,740 surviving stores with Sprint. A Delaware bankruptcy judge approved the sale of the stores to the Standard General Hedge Fund, which will keep them open and devote about a third of those stores to Sprint products. Jason Heiner, do you think this is going to damage the Sprint brand now that Radio Shack is kind of a tarnished brand?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think Radio Shack is kind of a nostalgic brand still.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people have really good feelings about it, especially of a certain age. And so, you know, that helps. I don't know, in terms of the Sprint thing, I mean, they don't have as good a penetration as, you know, Verizon and AT&T in terms of stores. And so, you know, this probably does help them. They've got some bigger problems they need to deal with, but they do still have. I mean, Sprint still is sitting on this great amount of spectrum that they haven't decided what they're going to do with it. But they own as much spectrum or almost as much as Verizon. You know, they own some great spectrum, so they can still do some great things. But they do have some fundamental challenges, especially with sort of backhaul. Anyway, that's getting into some of Sprint's problems. But in terms of, you know, this certainly, I don't think this can hurt Sprint. And I think that, you know, it could potentially help them. And if it does keep Radio Shack alive, then and you know, potentially still doing some good stuff, doing some useful services. I mean, they're still a brand that I think a lot of people have a good feeling about. Then, yeah, it is kind of a win-win. I mean, Radio Shacks have been on the been going downhill for a while, but they do still have, in terms of they look like any other just a small version of any other electronic store, not sort of the real sort of almost like hacker maker space that they used to be. And so I think they would be better off maybe going in that direction, going more and turning it back into more of a hacker maker space kind of brand. So I think that, you know, in terms of would that be better? I think, yes, it would be. But for Sprint, it's not going to hurt them. It's only going to help them.
Yeah. And of course, Radio Shack has to be given credit for they were way ahead of their time harvesting personal information of visitors long before Facebook ever existed. So even when you're just buying batteries. Well, speaking of Verizon, Verizon Wireless customers can now opt out of the carrier's controversial super cookies. Verizon says its systems have been changed to prevent a unique identifier called a UIDH from being inserted when customers opt out. In the past, customers had no ability to opt out, and there was concern, Jason Heiner, that this unique identifier could be sort of hijacked for nefarious reason, purposes. And now you can opt out, and when you do opt out, it actually doesn't use that unique identifier.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Facebook is rolling out a new scrapbook feature that enables parents to put photos of their kids under the age of 13 in a special photo album, with each child getting his or her own scrapbook. You need to be 13 to use Facebook, but Scrapbook allows parents to tag these non-members. They can be tagged with nicknames or pseudonyms. Let's check out Facebook's video.
Scrapbooks are a great new way to keep track of the unforgettable moments and milestones you'll share with your child. With the scrapbook, you can tag photos of your child to create a special collection that grows with your family, from first steps to first days of school. Coming soon, you'll be able to invite family members and friends to subscribe to a scrapbook, so they never miss a moment you choose to share with them. And you are always in control of your child's tag. Parents choose to make a scrapbook, and only they can choose which photos to tag in it.
How do you feel about this, Jason? Is this a wonderful thing for parents who want to share pictures of their kids, or is this a way to get kids sort of like, you know, into the Facebook system long before they're old enough to actually sign up?
Oh, yeah, it's definitely a way to get kids involved in the Facebook ecosystem as soon as possible. That's not a terrible idea on their part, but I think it's certainly not going to guarantee that those kids are going to stick around once they become teenagers and want to hang out with their friends. You know, Facebook's just not a place that a lot of teenagers are hanging out anymore. It's a place to hang out with your parents and your aunts and uncles and your grandparents and that kind of thing. It's not really a great place to hang out with your friends. So I don't think that this, I don't know that this is going to help, but you know, but it's definitely going to help the parent grandparent crowd on Facebook. They'll love it. It's perfect for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, in mergers and acquisitions news, Charter Communications announced plans to buy Bright House Networks for $10.4 billion, but only if Comcast's proposed acquisition of Time Warner Cable is approved. The contingency is based on Charter's stake in the Comcast merger. Charter would gain 1.4 million subscribers from Time Warner Cable in exchange for $7.3 billion if that deal is approved, and also divest itself of 2.5 million subscribers by spinning off a new cable company called Greatland Connections. Jason Heiner, I have the feeling, I guess I'm kind of cynical. I'm against the Comcast merger with Time Warner Cable, but I think it's going to happen anyway. But as we're seeing from this, it's actually very, very complicated. It's going to completely change the entire industry.
Yeah, it is complicated. And obviously there's some fear about it. You know, this one sort of smells like a little bit of a fear move of like, if Comcast and Time Warner get that big, you know, what does it mean for some of these other players? I agree. I don't think Comcast Time Warner is a great thing. There's not enough competition in the U.S. broadband market as it is. And although they don't compete very often in many markets and that kind of thing, they are still, in a sense, competitors in that when one offers, you know, a deal, in terms of pricing or features and that kind of thing, even if it's in an adjacent market or a different market, it puts pressure on the other to kind of match and beat that. And once this merger happens, you know, then they are no longer competitors in that sense. So, I don't think that the U.S. having fewer broadband providers is a good thing by any stretch. And so anything that causes us to have fewer is potentially anti-competitive and anti-consumer, because we need more.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Well, the Indian government has banned the use of any software that isn't open source. The government's powerful Ministry of Communication and Information Technology said open source adoption was necessary to support the government's goal to transform India into a digitally empowered society and a knowledge economy. This is bad news, I guess, for the Microsofts and the Apples of the world, Jason Heiner. It's kind of a surprise move, I think. But it's, you know, they put all their suppliers on notice. It's got to be open source.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, Munich, other cities have done this. You know, I don't know if a country has done it. But, you know, Munich has done it, and Munich, Germany. And they've had some challenges with it some of those have been overblown in the media too, especially by people waiting for that thing to fail or hoping that it would fail. You know, there are challenges to doing it. There are challenges to using open source, but at the same time, it does let you kind of take your destiny in your own hands and, you know, change the code and change the software itself to fit what you need. It's interesting because it often does mean more jobs, because it sometimes takes more coders and more people to manage those installations. In some cases and not in others, you know, the argument would be the open source crowd would argue that, you know, the stuff is more stable. Once you know, get it up and running, you tend to set it and forget it. You don't have to do as much to it as you might with some of these other proprietary solutions. This would be huge. If this really happens, this would be pretty big. It would maybe be the largest entity in terms of number of people served, government entity that's sort of jumping to open source. And so it would be interesting, and it would certainly, India itself has a big influence on the rest of the world because so much of the coding and product development now is being done there. So it's significant. This is definitely something to watch.
Yeah, definitely. Well, in our insecurity segment, Google has found that 192 ad-injecting extensions for the Chrome browser contained malware or involved deceptive practices, and so they're banning those extensions. They learned this in a study conducted by Google in partnership with researchers at UC Berkeley, and the full report will be released May 1st. Something like 5%, Jason Heiner, of the people visiting Google had these sort of evil ad-injecting extensions in their browsers. I think this is great that they're weeding them out.
Yeah, it is great. I mean, especially in light of what happened with Lenovo and the you know, the essentially the crapware that was on there that was inserting ads in people's systems and was also potentially a security liability and all that. It's good to see people taking this kind of thing more seriously, because that was something that was, you know, that came to light and made us realize, like, wow, some of these things that are happening in the background on some of the stuff that we're installing is really pretty nefarious.
Yes, it absolutely is. Well, our TNT fan of the day is Janelle Coleman, who posted this picture on Google+. You know they're a TNT fan because they have way too many monitors. These are way too many large monitors. Very cool. There we are, front and center on the top.
Thanks.
Love to see it. How do you watch or listen to TNT? Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup and post it on Google+, Twitter, or Facebook using the hashtag HowIWatchTNT, and we will find it. Jason Heiner, you're working on a book. How is that going?
Yeah, excellent. So the book's called Follow the Geeks, and the third chapter has recently been released, the third chapter, chapter 3. Is on Gina Trapani, and that one is available for free right now. We release, as we're publishing the chapter, we're serial publishing, so that each time we release a chapter, it's available for free for a limited time until the next chapter is available. And the book itself will be available later this year, in the second half of the year, but we're releasing it serially so that we can get it in the hands of our readers. And we also invite their feedback so that we're going to take the best and most insightful comments about sort of each of these people and their journey and what and how they impacted the industry and how their journey has inspired other people. And we're including those comments, the best comments, at the end of each chapter in the final published version of the book. And so we also crowdfunded the book. to kind of launch it. So we made ourselves, we're self-publishing. So instead of making ourselves responsible to a publisher, we're making ourselves responsible to our most loyal readers. And so they, you know, all of our crowdfunding backers, they get the chapters, they get early access to them a couple of days before they go public. You know, as kind of a thank you for supporting the project. And the book's also available for pre-order. We're giving the chapters away for free. There's no ads. There's no anything on them. All that we ask is if you like it, that you pre-order it. You can pre-order on the website. Or if you can't pre-order it, that you share it, you know, on social and let other people know about it.
Well, it's a brilliant model. I love it. And I'm going to be influenced by that for my upcoming book, which I'll tell you about on the show eventually. But I can't wait to read the whole book together, the updated book. And I love the model. I've done this with opinion columns before, but I love the model of putting it all out there, inviting, you know, nothing is better in terms of fact checking than a mob of smart people. Who are the kinds of people who are going to read this book, right? So if people make mistakes, of course, that's why editors exist, but you get a whole bunch of people crowdsourcing the facts and even the expression of those facts, and you're going to end up with a book with no factual errors, which is a beautiful thing. So
definitely.
Congratulations on this ongoing project, and we'll see you on the show next time.
Awesome. Thanks, Mike. Right. Always a pleasure to be here.
Pleasure's mine. Take care. You can subscribe to Tech News Today on Stitcher. Great place to subscribe, or you can choose your favorite way to subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. You can watch us live every weekday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC at live.twit.tv, or in the app or browser plugin of your choice. If you're ever near the Brick House in Petaluma, California, come on in and watch us as part of our studio audience. You can follow us on Twitter at Tech News Today TV, and you can follow me on YouTube. I'm at youtube.com/user Mike Elgin with one E in the middle. Let us know what you think. Send us an email to tnt@twit.tv or call 260-TNT-SHOW. And don't miss Tech News Tonight at 4 p.m. Pacific every single weeknight. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the Tech News Today. My name's Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.